Hello and welcome. You're listening to Doc's Opinion, where medicine meets meaning. Founded by Dr. Axel F. Sigurdsson, this platform blends clinical insight with storytelling to explore the deeper questions behind modern health. In this episode, we bring you Axel's newest essay, Brain Fog Nation. Is brain fog a real condition, or just the background noise of 21st century life? Drawing from fictionalized encounters rooted in real-world experience, the essay explores why so many of us feel mentally foggy, distracted, or just slightly off. From neurobiology to digital overload, from memory to meaning, it's a journey through the science and the soul of modern attention. Take a breath and step into the fog. The people you'll meet in these pages are not patients, but composites, voices pieced together from medicine, conversation, and memory. Their stories are invented, yet they echo something real, what many call brain fog. It is not a formal diagnosis. It has no lab value, no scan, no line in a textbook. It is reported, not measured, a lived experience of blurred thought, slowed focus, and slips of memory. What follows is not a case series. It is a way of listening, from different angles, to something medicine has not yet learned how to name. Chapter 1. The fog rolls in. The sky hung low, gray, damp, the kind of morning where the mountain Escha disappears, not gone, just hidden. I watched from my office window. No wind, no sharp lines, just a blurred outline of what should be clear. That's when I thought of Anna. She came in earlier that day. 49, healthy on paper, except for a family history of cardiomyopathy. Composed, capable, but she chose her words carefully. She looked up. My heart is fine, she said. It's my brain I'm worried about. I'm not sick, she said, but I'm not, right? I laugh at things. I function, but I feel like, she gestured vaguely in front of her, like my brain is buffering. She let it hang. I lose names I've known forever. Walk into rooms and forget why. I reread emails. I blank mid-sentence. It's not anxiety, not stress, just fog. When does it happen? I asked. Afternoons mostly, after multitasking. Sometimes I just stop. My thoughts pile up like cars at a yellow light. It's not memory loss, it's slowed access. Still me, just lagging. I've heard this before. People who pass every cognitive test, whose scans are clean, whose blood work is perfect. Not depressed, not burned out, just not themselves. Normal data, but something isn't. Have you talked to anyone else about it? I asked. She half smiled. My GP said mindfulness. The neurologist blamed perimenopause. My hormones are within range. A friend said stress. I even wondered if it could be Alzheimer's. Early onset, or maybe long COVID. Some even say the vaccine. People whisper, but nobody really knows. I just want to understand what's happening and to know I'm not the only one. You're not, I said. Not even close. Friends, colleagues, patients, all describe the same thing. People who used to read books now skim headlines. Who forget mid-sentence? Who function just fine, on paper, but feel something slipping through the cracks? We call it brain fog. It's not in the textbooks, but it's in the waiting rooms, in the offices, in the quiet doubts of people who swear they're fine. Maybe that's the problem. And maybe it's spreading. Chapter 2, The Provocateur in the Coffee Shop. The rain hadn't let up. I found a seat by the window. Gunnar was already there. Two black coffees on the table. His coat steamed gently, rain dripping from the hem. He looked older than last time, or maybe just more certain of himself. I ordered for you, he said. Still black, right? Still black. We sat quietly, watching the street. People passed with hoods up, heads down, pushing through more than the weather. What do you think about brain fog? I asked. Gunnar stirred his cup. Vague term, which makes it useful and dangerous. He sipped. I assume you've seen more of it lately? I nodded. Everywhere. People say they can't focus. Lose words. Read the same message three times and still forget to reply. Sounds like modern life, he said and leaned back. Gunnar had once taught psychology, now mostly advising companies that claim to value deep work. He had a style, half therapist, half provocateur. Give him a few minutes, and he could argue almost anything into truth. But is it new? I asked. The symptoms? No. The context? Yes. He gestured at the street. People used to complain about boredom, Now they complain they can't hold a thought. We live in a world of interruptions. You pick up your phone to check the weather, but before you get there, you've skimmed headlines, read about a celebrity death, and watched a dog save a goat. That's not distraction. He let it hang, then dropped it like a verdict. That's hijack. But what does it do to the brain? I asked. We used to focus on getting things done. Now we switch tasks to feel alive. Every scroll, swipe, or click gives a dopamine bump. Not for solving anything, just for shifting attention. The brain rewires to prefer novelty over depth. Speed over clarity. Stillness starts to feel uncomfortable. Silence becomes friction, and thinking real thinking feels like work. He tapped his cup lightly. That's the cost, and it adds up. It's like a background hum, I said. Something you can't turn off. Exactly, that hum becomes normal. You stop noticing. But it shapes everything. There's a reason people describe fog as a place. It's immersive. You don't feel sick, just off track. The rain ticked against the glass. You know what the Greeks thought about memory? He asked. I shook my head. Mnemosyne, a goddess, the mother of the muses. Without memory, there's no art, no science, no history. Nothing human. He finished his coffee. So when memory weakens, not the facts but the texture, we lose more than recall. We lose presence, imagination, meaning. In brain fog, I asked. Gunnar gave me a sideways glance, the kind that dared you to argue. Maybe it's not a glitch, he said. Maybe it's a warning. Chapter 3. The Hot Tub Confession. Steam rose from the water like something half alive. The air was thick, salty still. Fog clung to the world, softening everything into suggestion. Still working yourself to death? Jonas asked, eyes closed, arms stretched along the rim of the tub. Only part-time, I said, lowering myself in. The heat gripped my back, climbed my neck. Jonas cracked an eye, grinned. Bullshit, you've never done anything part-time in your life. He let his head drop back, still smiling. Jonas was retired now. A legend on the golf course, 3, sometimes 4 rounds a week. Everyone knew him. He knew everyone. His stories were old, but never stale. Details shifted, punchlines stretched, and somehow that only made them better. Feels like my brain doesn't reload properly anymore, he said suddenly. Like a web page stuck at 82%. I laughed. You too? I blamed stress at first, but stress left and it stayed. A seagull screeched behind us, sharp, insistent, like it had something urgent to announce. I started hiding the phone, Jonas said. The garage, once under a towel. How long did that last? I asked. 10 minutes, once half a day. By evening, I'd convinced myself half my friends had died and I just hadn't seen the messages yet. I grinned. He didn't. It's like my attention isn't mine anymore, he said. Like someone else is steering it, and I only notice once I've drifted. He stared into the gray distance. Tried reading a book last week. First chapter in, my brain started twitching, like it was searching for the scroll bar. I used to read for hours. Now I skim sentences in my own head. We sat in silence, not uncomfortable, just real. Maybe it's the Russians, he said finally. Some sabotage hacking the Western mind, one ping at a time. I chuckled. If they are, they're doing a damn good job. Jonas traced a hand through the steam. It got bad last winter, he said, almost casually. Bad how? He didn't answer right away. That's a longer story, but I'll tell you this. When people say fog, I know what they mean. It's not a metaphor, it's a place, and once you're in it, you're not sure you'll find your way back. The seagull called again, softer this time, as if it had changed its mind. Jonas leaned his head back. Ever talk to Gunnar about this? He asked. Bet he's got a theory. I did. He always does. Chapter 4. The Oslo Professor. He had winter in his eyes. That was the first thing I noticed. The way I'd once described him when we spoke about mTOR and the limits of human lifespan. His voice was clinical, his outlook unsparing. Professor Einar Skoglund had recently retired from the University of Oslo after more than a decade as chair of biochemistry. We first met at a longevity symposium in Iceland. Now he was back, invited to lecture on brain aging, synapses, metabolism, and what happens when regulation falters. We sat in a harbor cafe. The sea outside was flat and gray. He stirred his coffee slowly, then looked at me. You told me you were writing about brain fog, about attention, memory, and why people feel their minds slipping, he said. I nodded. Do you want the simple explanation or the biochemical one? Both. Good, because they are the same. He leaned forward. Think of attention not as a spotlight, but as a muscle that tires, recovers, and fails if overused. Every time you shift tasks, app to message, notification, then back to work, the brain has to reset. That reset burns energy. Do it often enough, and the system becomes less efficient. He tapped his spoon against the cup. With repetition, the brain adapts badly. It lowers the threshold for switching. Focus weakens. Working memory slips. It's like a conductor who stops keeping the orchestra in sync. He paused. Chemically, dopamine signaling wobbles. The control networks can't hold steady. Sleep gets lighter. Memory consolidates poorly. And another system, the so-called default mode network, keeps intruding when it should quiet down. The brain isn't actually tired. It's noisy, and noise feels like fog. People don't describe it in those terms, he added. They just say, I can't think. I nodded. They call it fog. Yes, but fog suggests weather, something that drifts in and lifts again. What if it isn't weather? What if it's residue? The smoke of chronic overload. He looked at me steadily. And the longer we feed the fire, the harder it will be to clear the air. Chapter 5. The Doubter. We were standing by the espresso machine in the staff lounge, waiting for the grinder to finish its rattling sermon. Outside, the wind slapped against the windows like it had something personal to settle. Fog. Helga tilted her head, a hint of a smile tugging at the corner of her mouth. You're writing about fog now? Helga was a colleague, sharp, ambitious, and unflinchingly competent. The kind of doctor who'd been trained in an era of protocols and precision, where clarity was king and outcomes were measured in metrics. She didn't waste words, and she didn't chase shadows. I've been hearing it more, I said. People who feel off. Not depressed, not burned out. Just foggy. She reached for a cup, turning it in her hand before setting it down again. And you're taking it seriously. Her tone was curious, but edged with disbelief. Of course, I said. It keeps coming up. Helga gave a short laugh, the kind that carried no warmth. We used to call that life, or not sleeping enough. Everyone feels tired. Everyone loses a word now and then. If we start pathologizing every lapse, we'll end up writing prescriptions for Mondays. She paused. Don't tell me you believe it's the COVID vaccine, or long COVID. Everyone wants a neat villain to blame. I said nothing, letting her run. She went on, look, show me objective findings, imaging, blood work, something measurable. Otherwise, you're just chasing anecdotes. You know how medicine works. Symptoms without markers don't survive long. They fade, like all the other fashions. She poured her coffee black, no hesitation. Honestly, she added, softer now but still sharp. You're too smart for this. Then she left, coat swinging, heels clicking against the tile, her certainty trailing behind her like perfume. The final chapter. The question that lingers. So does brain fog exist? Or is it just life? A byproduct of being alive in a world that won't stop spinning. Helga would say it's nothing more than tiredness. She might be right. Or she might be missing something. We've tried to name it cognitive fatigue, attention dysregulation, post-viral dysphoria, screen overload. None of it quite captures the lived texture, the way it blunts the edges, slows the fire, smudges the line between presence and performance. At its simplest, brain fog is the name people give to lost clarity, slower thinking, weaker focus, more slips of memory. Not a disease. Not yet. But not nothing. It's a physiological response to interruption. to waking with alerts and falling asleep with glow, to toggling tabs and threads until the brain, built for depth, learns to operate in fragments. Attention isn't just something we give. It's something we train, and we've been training it to fracture. Studies show attention systems under strain. Constant digital input disrupts focus, weakens memory, and erodes the ability to think deeply. Dopamine patterns shift toward distraction. Even the default mode network, once linked to creativity and daydreaming, now intrudes when it shouldn't. Sometimes I wonder if we'll adapt. If this fog is a clumsy transition, a temporary rewiring we'll eventually master. Other times, I look out the window, and the mist still hangs over Mountain Estia. Not dramatic, not dangerous, just there. S, softening the horizon, hiding the sharp edges. We built a world too fast to think in and called it progress. But don't worry. There's probably an app for it.